Okay, so the topic that's on people's minds these days, unfortunately, is a terrible earthquake that took place in
Recording in
Turkey
progress.
not long ago. And as of before Shabbos, the casualties were over 20,000. Really, really terrible, terrible destruction. They arrested dozens of contractors who apparently built buildings in Turkey which were not up to code and dangerous. And that obviously escalates the possibility of death and an injury and buildings collapsing, and someone's got to take responsibility for that. But I wanted to take the opportunity to consider some of the halachic angles, also hashkafic and maybe a little historical side of things related to earthquakes, how we look at them, how we respond to them in all of the above categories. All right, so let's begin with a Mishnah, which I think we discussed not so long ago in a different context. The Mishnah has at the beginning of the ninth parak of Brachos, Haroah Makom Shenasu Bo Nisim L'Yisrael, Omer Baruch She'asu Nisim L'Avoseinu B'Makom Hazeh. This is first on your source sheets. When a person comes to a place where a certain nes occurred, they come to the shores of the Yamsuf, they would make a bracha. If we could identify exactly where the Jewish people crossed, that this is a place, She'asu Nisim L'Avoseinu B'Makom Hazeh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed a miracle for the Jewish people, for our forefathers at this location. Okay, that's one bracha. Shenekra, Malkum Shenekra Mimena Akum. If you come to a place where there was a church, there was some sort of Avodah Zarah, and it was removed, it was destroyed, so then there's a bracha for that too. Omer Baruch She'akar Avodas Kochavim Mazalos Mi'artzeinu. It has to be in Eretz Yisrael. But the bracha celebrates the fact that it was a victory. A victory that the Avodah Zarah was removed from Eretz Yisrael. Now we have the category of brachas that we're going to focus a little more on this morning, and they relate to natural phenomena and particularly impressive parts of the globe. So al zikin v'alzavos v'alra'amim v'aruchos v'alabrakim omer baruch shakochog v'rosam al-yolam. Okay, so we have a list of five things upon which a person would make a bracha of shakochog v'rosam al-yolam. And some of these are easier to define than others, but we'll do the best we can. We'll keep it simple for the moment. Working backwards, Brakim, Barak, lightning, okay? And Ra'amim, thunder. Ruchos refer to some very, very strong winds. We'll see in a little while in the Shulchan Aruch how that is defined. But let's say a person is in the middle of a hurricane, 100 miles an hour wind. That would be, let's say, Ruchos. Then we have Zikin. Zikin is something celestial. We'll say meteors or comets, perhaps. If a person witnesses those going through the sky, makes a bracha. And finally, the term that we're going to spend most of our time on this morning is Zavos. Zavos, we will translate for now as an earthquake. Okay, so all these examples, if a person witnesses them, they make a bracha of Shekocho Grosso Mali Olam. And then finally, the Mishnah, the last part that we're going to deal with this morning, Alaharim Val Gavos, Val Yamin, Val Naharos, Val Midbaros, Omer Baruch Osei Maisa Bereishis. Add in the word Maisa Bereishis over there. Okay, so that last group is talking about you go to the Alps, you go to a very impressive mountain range, you see rivers, you see Midbaros, desert, great bodies of water. Okay, all these receive. All these require bracha of osa maisa bereishis. These are all brachas hashevach, brachas of praise, recognizing the amazing and impressive aspects of Hashem's creation. Okay, so that's the background. That's the basis for any discussion in this context. So we have to get a little bit more precise in our definitions, but we also need to understand if these brachos are precisely as they are presented over here. Okay, so at face value, it looks like you have two different brachos for two different categories. First category are things that happen occasionally, maybe infrequently, but they happen occasionally and you witness them. And the second category are things that are fixtures of nature, like the mountains. Okay, nevertheless, halacha l'maisa, the lines are a little bit blurred. Okay, we have two different mesoros going back to a more recent earthquake. In our history, 1927, there was an earthquake that was felt in many parts of Eretz Yisrael, was felt in Yerushalayim as well. And reportedly, some of the greats of Yerushalayim, such as Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnfeld, the Rav of Yerushalayim at the time, the Eir HaRedis, as well as Rabbi David Baran, another great of Yerushalayim in the earlier part of the 20th century, they made the bracha of Osei Maaseh Bereishis. Whereas the Stipler, he is recorded as telling his Talmidim they should. I'm sorry, the first group of Gedolim made the bracha of Shekocho Gvorosa Mali Olam. Hashem's strength and Hashem's power is felt and fills the world. The Stipler, on the other hand, instructed his Talmidim to make the bracha of Osei Maaseh Bereishis. So how could there be two different reactions to the earthquake? Now, the Stipler wasn't in Eretz Yisrael at the time, in 1927. He didn't come till closer to World War II. Ultimately, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. He died, and he spent most of his life in Bnei Brak. He died in the late 70s. How do we have two different responses to an earthquake? So the Gemara clarifies for us in Daf Nun Tes. We're not going to see it inside right now, but we will see it in the Shulchan Aruch that you have in the next source, in Siman Reish Chav Zayin, where we find, as the Gemara tells us over there, at least according to our Girsa, in the statement of Rava, that there is some fluidity over here. There is some degree of subjectivity. You can make a choice which bracha you make. Very unusual, the context of brachas, to be able to have that selection. But look at Siman Reish Chav Zayin, where we also narrow down a little bit of the definition, some of these phenomena. Al-Zikim. Zikim hu kimin kochav hayorah kecheitz b'orach ha-shamayim. It's like a star that shoots, similar to an arrow, ba'orach ha-shamayim, across the sky, mimakom mimakom, from one place to another, v'nimshach oro keshevet, and behind it trails some sort of light. That's the first example of Shekocho Gvorosa Mali Olam. Va'ra'adat ha'aretz, ri'idat ha'aretz, ri'idat adamah. That is the term that's used in modern Hebrew to refer to an earthquake. Al ha'brakim, as well as lightning, ra'amim, thunder, ruchos, shenashvu b'zaf, winds that come with a fury, akol echad me'ilu omer baruch atah Hashem malkeinu melech ha'olam, Osei Maaseh Bereishis. So, simple selection of those two brachos, the first statement of the Shulchan Aruch, is to say Osei Maaseh Bereishis, despite the fact that that's not the implication of the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah has Shekocho Gvorosa Mali Olam initially on that category of events. The Shulchan Aruch adds in the next line, V'myirtza yomar baruch atah Hashem malkeinu melech ha'olam Shekocho Gvorosa Mali Olam. If you want to make a bracha, instead, Shekocho Gvorosa Mali Olam, about the strength and power of Hashem that is felt when one witnesses one of these events, you can make that bracha as well. So very interesting, again, that you have a selection altogether. We can definitely appreciate the Stipler's preference following the Shulchan Aruch statement that seems to put Osei Maaseh Bereishis as lechatchila, as the number one choice, versus the Mishnah, which would put Shekocho Gvorosa Mali Olam as the number one choice. And as we said, that was the selection of the Gedolei Yerushalayim. But either way you go, Stipler told his Talmidim that you have to be prepared. You have to know these halachas in advance, because when push comes to shove and you're facing this this earthquake in real time, so you're not going to be able to deal with looking up the Shiloh. You're going to have to run for your life. You're going to have to take whatever precautions are necessary, hide under the table, whatever they tell you to do, in order to prevent any injury or risk during the time of the tremors. Okay, so you need to know what to say. That's the New York City has a Department of Preparedness to make sure that people know how to deal with an event like this, Chas V'Shalom. The Stipler advocated halachic preparedness, and we could take the Stipler's suggestion one step further and say it's not just about knowing the halacha, but it's also part of what we call our eschatology, the future, and what we have in store as we get closer to the time of Mashiach. It's not just an event that happens naturally in our world, but it's also something which is part and parcel of the nevuos that the prophets discuss for the future. If you look in Yecheskel, Perek Lamed Ches Pasuk Yotes, a little bit further down on the sheet number 4, the Pasuk in Yecheskel reads as follows: "B'yomahu Yaraj Gadol Al Admas Yisrael." When that fateful day comes, the Mochama of Gog and Magog, there will be a Rash Gadol Al Admas Yisrael, a great thunder, a great noise, not just a thunder in the sky, but a thunder al Admas Yisrael. Noam Hashem Elokim Talech Hamasib Api Uvikenasib Eishav Rasi Dibartim Lo Bayomahu Yerash Gadol Al Admas Yisrael. The pasuk says explicitly, right, and that immediately before, V'hayu Bayomahu Bayom Bo Gog Al Admas Yisrael. This is going to be the time when Gog comes to the land of Israel. There will be a great Ra'ash, and that Ra'ash will shake things up. Pasuk says, "Rash mipanai degei hayam, The fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the animals and the insects, everything is going to reverberate from the power of that noise. That will be Hashem's response, it seems, to Gog's attack on Admas Yisrael. All human beings on the globe, on the face of the earth, it sounds like, will feel the impact of that earthquake. V'nersu aharim, the mountains will be destroyed. Nafalam adregos, all ascents will topple. V'chol chom la'artzipol, and all walls will fall to the ground. Zechariah also describes, in even more vivid details, some say almost scientific details, about an earthquake that will break Har HaZeisim. Okay, in Yerushalayim, right next to the old. So this is something that the Nevi'im predict for the future. So we have to sort of look at this all together, not just for the past, but for the future as well. So let's talk about how we know that Zavos are indeed earthquakes. Okay, because the Psukim we just saw in the Navi didn't use that term specifically. We have a vague term Zavos that appears in the Mishnah, but it's not just in the Mishnah. As a matter of fact, that is how Rashi and Meiri read our sugya in Brachos, but others, such as the Rambam, open the door to include other things. The Rambam has a lashon kol havar shetishma ba'aretz kimo rechayim gedolim. It's not so much the shaking of the earth, but it's more a sound, some sort of rumbling in the earth that sounds like the grinding of a huge millstone. Okay, so we're not going to adopt that definition straight up, but we'll take that into account in a little while, but let's focus on where perhaps Chazal are coming from in terms of how the interpretation and the Shulchan Aruch, it comes down to us today. Take a look at source number 2 on the sheet, to Yalkut Shimoni in Yoel, the underlined bolded area, after quotes our Mishnah, says that we can go further, not just looking at the words of Chazal, but min ha-mikro minayin. How do we know that there's a bracha on earthquakes from the psukim ha-mabit la'aretz v'tirad maksiv achrav yichor Hashem li'olam? In Tehillim Kuv Dalet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ha-mabit la'aretz v'tirad, he looks towards the earth and the earth shakes. Okay, so that seems to be describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating some sort of phenomenon where the world is trembling. And what does it say right afterwards? Yichor Hashem li'olam. Yichvod Hashem Mevorach. So the response to this event of the earth shaking is honoring Kvod Hashem, blessing Kvod Hashem, and that would warrant a bracha. Okay, along similar lines, number 3, Medrash Shochar Tov, the Medrash on Tehillim, in Kapitel Yudches, Vatig Ash Vatir Asha Aretz. The earth trembled and resounded. Okay, so even though the term Ra'ash is usually most closely related to Re'idas Adama and earthquakes, Vatigash may actually be a better selection over here, although they both seem to be addressing a similar phenomenon. If you look in the commentary of Rav Shamsha Fuller Hirsch, the source of the word Gash, Vatigash, okay, and the etymology, he suggests relates to Ka'as. Ga'ash and Ka'as are similar words, and the fury, the anger, so to speak, that's anthropomorphically reflected in the earth shaking, could be the anger or the ga'ash that the pasuk is referring to right now. In modern Hebrew, maybe we'll come back to this a little bit later, a volcano is a har ga'ash, because that's exactly what's happening. The eruption, the anger, the fury that's coming from the earth is what we see. It's what's manifested in a volcanic eruption. So Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmin, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmin comments on that pasuk in Tehillim, "Batig Ash Vatir Sha'aretz." Lama has Zavos Bos. Why do earthquakes? Again, that mysterious word Zavos that we saw in the Mishnah. Why does it come? And he gives an explanation which maybe we'll come back to later. Al Hefzik Ben Malchus to Malchus seems to be something that correlates with the shifting of powers in a particular country, in a particular place. Okay, we're not so worried about the reasons behind that at this moment, but we do see in the Medrash, the words of Chazal take our Mishnah's terminology of Zavos in a similar fashion as we saw in Shulchan Aruch, bringing it down to our definition of an earthquake. Okay, that's all in terms of just laying down the basics. Let's start talking about some of the halachos. So we mentioned earlier in the name of the stipler that you need to be prepared. The preparedness for the earthquake is not just to know what bracha to make, But some of the parameters of the performance of that mitzvah are also going to be critical and, we'll say, time sensitive. Let's use that as an example. What you have in source number six. Source number five, the Ritva writes in Maseches Pesachim, Dav Zayin over there, is a sugya very heavy with some of the dinim of brachos that form the basis of practical halacha all over Shulchan Aruch. And the Ritva starts by making a comment on the main subject in that sugya, which is the concept of overlas yasam. Kol ha-mitzvos kulam. The Gemara says that all mitzvos require a bracha over las yasin before the mitzvah is performed, right? So before you light Chanukah candles, you make a bracha of Asher Gishram Zavzivano, Lahadlik, Ner, Shel Chanukah, and then you go ahead and you make the bracha, right? Then you go ahead and perform the mitzvah, you light the candles. Wonderful. If that's the case, right, we do find a few exceptions, right, Jason? Where do you find a mitzvah, let's start with candles, that the bracha is not made before performing the mitzvah? This is an easy one. A woman who lights Shabbos candles makes the bracha after she lights the candles, right? That's an exception to the rule. A person who is going to the mikveh, a ger, a convert who's using the mikveh for sure, will make the bracha after they finish the immersion because Asher kisham zavzivano al tulas ger, right? Al tula. So it only makes sense to recite the bracha of al hatvila. Once you are a Jew, Asher Kedusham Zavzivano Al Tvila, Al Mitzvah Tvila can only be made once a person is Jewish. Otherwise, you can't say that he was commanded to do so. As a result, it has to be done afterwards. You can't make the bracha over Las Yasin before you perform the mitzvah. But in general, it always comes beforehand. And the Ritva continues, Lo Kedei Lamai Berachas Anenin. When we say all mitzvos, that doesn't come to exclude Berachas Anenin. Of course, you make a bracha before you take a bite of the apple. Da'hi pshita, that's obvious. Also, lehanas ajivar, can't enjoy anything from this world. Can't enjoy the apple until you make a bracha first. V'lo b'lamayit el k'taz brachos brachos hashevach. It's only coming to exclude when the Gemara says all brachos mitzvah are recited before you actually perform the mitzvah. That's only coming to exclude the category of brachos known as the brachos hashevach. Kigor haroa es hayam agadol. Someone sees a great ocean, then they make a bracha. After they come in contact with it, after they see it, after they encounter it. Al-Zikim, al-Zavos. The other examples in our Mishnah, right? The other natural phenomena the person witnesses, like the very strong winds or the earthquakes. V'adai lo sagi she'ivarach al-achar iyo shmiya. It can only be made. The bracha can only be made after you see it or you hear it. Interesting. It's hard to see the wind. You can't see the earthquake. You may hear them, okay? But, you know, what exactly, you're not required to feel the winds. You can be inside when I make the bracha on the hurricane, perhaps. I see those, you know, those videos of the palm trees swaying in the wind, and the hurricanes in Florida, whatever it might be. But in the end of the day, it has to be done after the encounter of the senses with that particular phenomenon. Ve'ilu amar Yishalmi. The Yishalmi goes one step further and says, not just that it has to be specifically after the event occurs, after you witness it, but Shemavarech Tokedei Dibor, you have to make the bracha within the window of time. Tokedei Dibor, let's call it 2 seconds, 3 seconds, enough time for one to say, Shalom Alecha Rebbe, 2 or 3 seconds. After witnessing this event, then you make the bracha. Beyond that time period, if you don't say it within that window, I should say, within 1 second, 2 seconds, maybe 3 seconds, it's too late to say it. Too late to say it, okay? I'm not sure everyone is familiar with that. It would apply, based on this Ritva, to lightning and thunder as well, right? If you saw lightning, you heard thunder, you should make the bracha right away, Eitan. Should not delay at all. Now, you'll tell me, you know, sometimes people make the bracha later. So that's true. It happens to work when it comes to lightning and thunder, conveniently. You know, in the event of a storm, you'll probably have another chance to make the bracha a little bit later. Such is the nature of the storm that if you see lightning once, you wait a little while, you'll probably see lightning again. You'll have another opportunity to make that bracha. That's not always the case. Otherwise, when it's a one-time event, when it's something unique and specific, like the earthquake, Right? So you're not going to have a chance to make it if you didn't make it within Tokdei Dibur. That's why the stipend was exhorting his Talmidim to make sure to do it right away. I'm sorry, to know how to do it so you'll be able to make it right away. Talk about a few quirks in that halacha. But let me just expand a little bit further on this topic, and then I'll get your question, Rami. Give me one more minute, please. An application of this din of the Ritva would take us to the following scenario. Let's say a person was sleeping. They wake up in the middle of the night and they realize there's an earthquake, right? So what do you do? What do you do? What are the problems? What's preventing me from making a bracha on the earthquake? And again, you can copy and paste a number of the issues we're going to discuss in the next few minutes into the rules of lightning and thunder. The poskim do discuss it in that context as well. But let's focus on the earthquake. So that's the topic for today. If you're sleeping and all of a sudden everything starts shaking, your bed is shaking, you wake up and you realize you're in the middle of an earthquake. So what would be a preventative issue that make it impossible for you to make a bracha right away? So an obstacle, I should say, would be number one, the person had to use the bathroom, right? We usually don't make brachas in the morning because until a person has fully prepared themselves and begun their daily routine. Person, let's say, puts on tzitzit as soon as he wakes up. Okay, this is discussed explicitly in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Ches. Person should try not to walk 4 amos without wearing tzitzit. Keeps his tzitzit near the bedside, puts them on as soon as he gets out of bed, but he doesn't make the bracha right away, even though, in theory, right, we just said a moment ago, Asher Kishanam Tzav Tzivanu, Al Mitzvah Tzitzit, you should make the bracha over Las Yosan before performing the actual mitzvah. We don't do that because person's not supposed to make a bracha under certain conditions that would not be the proper covenant bracha. One example is if you have to use the bathroom. One is not supposed to recite any Dvarim Shel Kedusha if they have to use the bathroom. You should use the restroom first and then return to shul, put your tefillin back on, whatever it happens to be. But there are definitely situations where if you don't make the bracha right away, you're going to lose that opportunity. Okay? So we would tell you to forgo the need to use the bathroom. Okay, and ignore that for the moment. As long as the shiur and the poskim is if a person could wait approximately 72 minutes and refrain from using the bathroom in that for that duration, so then it is still acceptable in a shas hadchak situation to make a bracha to recite Dvarim Shel Kedusha. So this would be one of those shas hadchak situations where you can't make the bracha after the fact. So you could forego the requirement to go to the bathroom if you'd be able to refrain from using the restroom for that long. You can make the bracha right away. Another obstacle to make the bracha in the middle of the night would be the lack of netilas yadayim. Another thing that tells us to wait before we make the bracha, let's say on the tzitzis or anything else, as soon as we wake up in the morning, is the fact that we haven't yet washed our hands. Now, when exactly you would wash your hands also should be as soon as possible when you get out of bed. Many people do not make the bracha of al netil sedayim until they get to shul. That's why it's in the sitter as part of the morning routine over there, because of various considerations. It could be the washing of the hands more closely related to the davening, and a long period of time could go by between when you wake up in the morning and you wash your hands and when you actually begin tefillah. But we're not going to get into that conversation. We're just going to say that normally, one would not recite any Dvarim Shel Kedusha until they perform the Tehillas Yadayim. Here, if I take the time to run to the sink and wash my hands, again, I'm going to miss that Tokdei Dibur to make the bracha on the earthquake. This is also a situation where some poskim hold that one could forego the Tehillas Yadayim. Maybe wipe your hands on your blanket or something like that and make the bracha right away, because even though we are very careful not to recite any Dvarim Shel Kedusha or even delay too long before washing our hands, that seems to be of more Kabbalistic sources, and maybe indeed a Chumrah. The simple reading of the Gemara was that a bunch of things happened in the morning routine before a person actually washed their hands, and therefore, when push comes to shove, if a person had to make a bracha before Netilas Yadayim, it would be okay to do so. A similar question that's raised is, what about if a person is in a cemetery and they experience an earthquake? Should they make a bracha? Usually we avoid performing mitzvos in a cemetery because By doing so, one violates the pasuk of Loeg L'Rosh, Cheruv Hoseu. It's considered a disgrace to the Niftar, to a person who's passed away, if we perform mitzvahs in front of the Niftar, because they're no longer able to perform that mitzvah. That's why a person's supposed to tuck in their tzitzis when they go to the cemetery, when they're going to be in close proximity. Strictly speaking, it should not apply if you're not in the same room, or if you're outside, you're more than Dal Amos away from the mace. But again, the minhag is when you go into the cemetery, you're tucking your tzitzis so as not to perform a mitzvah in front of those who cannot perform the mitzvah. That's called Loeg L'Rosh. Along similar lines, maybe we should make a bracha in the cemetery. Again, this is, as we said, it's a do or die. This is the only time we're going to be able to do it. You don't know if there's going to be another earthquake to make a bracha on. What would be the halacha in a cemetery? So, again, this discussion also finds its way into lightning and thunder. And we do have one school of thought. For example, Chodashani Nissen Karelitz, great posik in Bnei Brak, passed away a few years ago. He said, one should not make the bracha. Whereas Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein in Chashuk Echemed, bracha is daf nandalet, said that a person should make the bracha because he holds that the concept of Loeg L'Rosh, not performing the mitzvah in front of the niftar, it doesn't apply when the bracha will have no tashlumin. Okay, it's an important concept, but would not override my opportunity to make the bracha, which I'm not going to have if I miss this chance. Again, the lightning and thunder, you may have another chance a little bit later, but when it comes to the earthquake, it's do or die. This is your only chance. This is your only chance, so you have to make it. And Rabbi Nissen Karelitz said, no, doesn't matter. The institution of Loeg L'Rosh is that it's docha the mitzvos. It's a big chiddush that it's more than just a dechuya that we when it comes to tzitzis, tucking your tzitzis isn't not performing the mitzvah. There are other applications of Loeg L'Rosh. Not supposed to carry sefer Torah, not supposed to wear tefillin in the Beis HaKfaras. So we're telling you to stop performing the mitzvah altogether. Okay, again, tzitzis, if we tell you to take off your tzitzis, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because strictly speaking, you're not obligated to wear tzitzis at every second. But whatever the case may be, if we are told Loeg L'Rosh, potters you from a mitzvah, so it means that there is no chiyuv. So even if it's a mitzvah of eris, even if it's a bracha, they're not going to be able to perform later. Okay, but kol echad lefi shaito. Every mitzvah has to be assessed for the current moment in real time, and the real time reality of being next to the mace tells me that I don't perform the mitzvah. The Mishnah Berurah actually has. Mishnah Berurah actually has two dais about someone who reads Kriya Shema liat hamace. The Rambam says very clearly, you're not yotzei yidei chavoso if you recite Kriya Shema next to the mace. Okay, so maybe that's an example. It's not exactly the same thing, but we have to be eyeing a little bit further. It could be that the bracha would be invalid, and therefore one should certainly not make it, even if there will be no opportunity for tashlumen. And this relates to another discussion we're not going to get into right now. Tshuva in Rav Shlomo Zalman and Chashlomo Simon Chelak Aleph Simon Tzadi Aleph about the bracha that one is supposed to make when they go to a cemetery. Asher Yotzar Eschem B'din. When that bracha should be made. It's common practice to make the bracha when the mace has already arrived in the cemetery, as they're about to remove the aron from the car and prepare it for the burial. But is that the right time to make the bracha for the cemetery? Maybe it should be made after the kvura, before you leave the cemetery. Or maybe we could suggest that this bracha was instituted in the cemetery, and perhaps Chazal did so, notwithstanding the general principle of Loeg L'Rosh. But again, we could also say that if one is on the road in the cemetery, more than Dal Amos away from a kever, that would also not present a problem as far as reciting a bracha in the presence of the mace. Okay, but that's for another time. Last point on this topic, and then Rami, I will get to your question. We're talking about the duration of the mitzvah. We're talking about the necessity to make the bracha pretty quickly after it occurs. Question is, in the same vein, the lightning and thunder, where you'll have a second chance afterwards, it is not just common. It's normal. It's normal for the following an earthquake for there to be aftershocks. Okay, and those aftershocks can be chronologically a little bit later, and they can be geographically, far away from the epicenter. In Eretz Yisrael, they were feeling aftershocks, 3 and 4 on the Richter scale, in Israel from the earthquake that hit Turkey and Syria. They're not really that far away. And by the time they hit Eretz Yisrael, they obviously weren't as strong, but the people were very, people in Eretz Yisrael were very aware of what was happening. But let's, that would definitely qualify as a bracha. But if you're in Turkey, the aftershocks of the initial disaster could still persist for a while, okay? Or if you're in Eretz Yisrael, the tremors that they felt, let's say a person feels the tremor, okay? It's nothing catastrophic, but it's enough to know I'm in the middle of an earthquake, okay? But they didn't know what to do immediately, okay? They didn't make the bracha. Then someone told them, oh, you know, you're supposed to make a bracha on the earthquake, and they feel another tremor. Could they make the bracha at that second chance? Take a look at the Shaar Tshuva. This is at the top of the second page of the source sheets on in the paragraph labeled as number 6. Number 6, Shaar Tshuva says as follows. Tzarech levarech v'levarech b'layla achas rak pam echad. Okay, this is talking about, let's say, the meteors. Make a bracha once per night. After a kochav acher ratz b'os alayla, ein tzarech levarech. Even if you saw another shooting star that night, you don't make another bracha. Gam al kochav sheish lo zona v'shevet shal ora shu pirish habei shal aram rabbeinu haiva arach tzarech levarech v'yosin nikob o'gvur sabori zbarach lios dover nifla. Built him also key in litim rochokos vim also kochav atzma robo chalayla and ro so besoch lamid yom in shach lachsul varch. Let's say it's a particular, you know, Halley's Comet. Okay, Halley's Comet comes once every 76 years. Last time was in 1986 when I was a kid. Okay, it's it's not just a shooting star, but it has this light trailing afterwards, which, according to some, is what's required. That was lashon of Shulchan Aruch as well. Not any shooting star or meteor or whatever it is, has to have this the comet. That's part of what demonstrates, the Shaar Tshuva says, the Dover Nifla. It's something amazing and it's very rare, it's very infrequent. So he says, you wouldn't make the bracha even if you saw another one on the next night. You'd only make the bracha once every 30 days, right? Just like the bracha we spoke about a moment ago, being at a cemetery, is only if you haven't been to a cemetery in 30 days. And the bracha, if you see the Alps, if you see some other amazing natural phenomenon, you'd only make the bracha if you had not witnessed it within the last 30 days. If you see a Talmud Chacham, make a bracha on Talmud Chacham, a bracha on the President of the United States of America, only if you haven't seen that individual within the last 30 days. Now, we can understand that very easily when we're talking about the mountain range, because the mountain range stays where it is. It's the same mountains. So it's only if it leaves an impression on me, only if it's an overwhelming sight. So if I saw it within the last 30 days, it's not going to have the same impact. However, that's not the case when we talk about lightning, thunder, things that originate, you know, and they're brand new, and they occur, even if they happen, you know, you can have a storm twice in a week, but it's a new bolt of lightning, and it's a new crash of thunder. So, same thing with the earthquake. Continue to start. It's a new phenomenon. Okay, so you would make another bracha on it, but only if some time has gone by between the first tremor and the second tremor. Okay, when it comes to lightning and thunder, it's not exactly the same thing. Lightning and thunder, we say that the storm has to end, the clouds have to part, and you have a sunny day again. And then, if a storm begins again, you can make a new bracha on the lightning and thunder. Or if it's a brand new day, if it was Tuesday, now it's Wednesday, you can make brachas as well. When it comes to the earthquake, it's an individual, unique phenomenon. You can make two brachas on the same day if it's two distinct earthquakes. However, not if they were so close together that he was not asach adaita minei. His mind did not leave the circumstances, right? If he feels the earthquake and now he's hiding under the table and he's staying there and he's waiting for the all clear, or he's waiting to feel comfortable to come out again, and 5 minutes later, while he's still bracing himself for another earthquake, another tremor, aftershocks, whatever it is, happened to come, he wouldn't make new bracha, because in his mind, right, that even if he spoke in between, but the mindset is still that I'm focused on the particular phenomenon and this is connected to that phenomenon, no new bracha would be made. Same thing would be true for winds. If, you know, the hurricanes can go on for hours, days, whatever, you know, that you're right at the center of the storm, so you're not making new bracha unless it really stopped and you had concluded that this was over with and then a new storm hit, you can make another bracha. Okay? Yes, Rami, what's your question? Okay, so to answer your question, Rami, let's just backtrack a little bit. We saw We referenced the Rambam. The Rambam said that it's more about the sound and the awareness of what's happening that is what characterizes the Zavos and the need to make the Bracha. Okay? Now, some say that therefore not be enough to experience the shaking of the earth, you'd actually need to hear the Rash in order to satisfy the opinion of the Rambam. And there is an opinion in the Poskim that cite that. There are also discussions in the Poskim as to whether or not we should differentiate. Maybe the two brachas we saw earlier, Osem Ha'Sabrachus or Shekochu Gvorasam Olyolam, we should say one on a weaker tremor and one on a stronger shock, the Kochu Gvorasam Olyolam being the one that would be appropriate for the more impressive earthquake. Okay, but the understanding of the Poskim, Shevi Kasi writes like this, Chel Kesim and Menvav, quoting Piskei Tshuvos, that from the Stimus of Poskim, the fact that Shulchan Aruch isn't Machalik, we accept the opinion that any earthquake, big or small, even if there's no danger, would still warrant the same bracha. Okay, the Shara Ayin, which is a sefer that has lots of interesting shailas about these types of phenomena, and Birchas Ri in general. He actually has a whole section on the back with an alphabetical list of national parks and international tourist sites and what brachas you make on them or don't make on them. And one question that he discusses is, what if you don't feel the earthquake, but you see the items moving? Okay? Now, there's all kinds of reports about animals acting strangely in minutes before earthquakes, and birds, I think it's been very well documented. Birds behave differently before hurricanes. But as far as an earthquake is concerned, even if you didn't actually experience the shock, but you just saw things moving, he suggests, Sharayan says, that would be like the Shmias Kol Ruach. That would be like hearing the sounds of the Rambam. The Rambam described. It's an interesting suggestion. I think we should probably adopt the simple approach that a person still has to know that there's an earthquake. Right? It might be a big chiddush if you just see things moving. We'll have to talk about that more, perhaps. But the Birkei Yosef does say that if you just hear the sound, even from a distance, and it's and you recognize the kol rechaim gedolim, the kol hanishmam l'merachok, sound from far away that's nikkur, the godless abore, shekochu rosam olam, you can make that bracha. But if a person has absolutely no cognizance, like in your case, Rami, you know, just the fact that someone said, by the way, you were in the middle of an earthquake, a little hard to accept. But I do want to add on this context, because it begins a new dimension to the Shaila. Rav Saadia Gaon, when he discusses this, so his Lashon, the Meir O suggests in some Reish Chav Zayin, is a little suggestive of more than just hurricanes. Okay, and that again is perhaps supported by that Lashon of the Rambam, where sounds alone from a distance could be enough. Maran ben Chaviv is where that Birkei Yosef is coming from, and he references this concept also of Kol Havara. And he also therefore opens the door based on that that thinking that it doesn't have to be only the particular phenomena that are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Saadia Gaon begins as follows. Now we're going to explain the events and the brachas that we make on those events that are tulim b'chushav, that are dependent on the senses that a person feels, witnesses with different chushim. And he says kigon haramim v'abrakim v'karne azikim v'asavos gamriidos adama, etc. So he says a kigon as if the items mentioned in the Mishnah and that are brought in Shulchan Aruch are not the only things that you would make a bracha on, but it could actually be a more expansive list. Anything that is similar in its overwhelming display of the Gvur of Hashem. Nafkamina, in the Sefer Shara Ayin, he talks about tsunamis and volcanoes and the like. Okay, we're not going to get into things such as geysers and waterfalls. There's literature about that also. But let's just talk about tsunamis and volcanoes. So he quotes there in the name of Rav Vosner and others that you'd make a bracha on a volcano if you see it erupting. And Rav Elazar suggests the only reason why that's not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, you're right, it's not limited to those examples. It's just the in the locations, in the places where Jews lived, it was very, very rare to encounter a volcano, and it just didn't happen. So therefore, it wasn't mentioned explicitly, but for sure, he said you can make a bracha on a volcano. Other poskim are very nervous, as is generally the mahalach. We don't extend the halachas of brachos to areas that were, that are a little vague. If Chazal were not mesakin a bracha on something, then you can't just go and make the bracha anytime you want. Like, you know, let's use the example we saw before. If you were impressed by the Alps and you made the bracha once every 30 days, okay, that's fine. Then you're following the halacha. But if you have a little cabin out in the mountains, and even after you've been there for 2-3 days, you're just so impressed with the view, you're not supposed to make a bracha just because you're impressed by it. But Chazal give a certain gedarim, they give a certain pathways that we should follow. Notwithstanding, we do find in the writings of certain Hasidic rebbes and their practices that they would find ways to make brachas on things that are not prescribed, such as in our case before, they're so impressed by the mountains but didn't warrant a bracha under their circumstances, so they recommended make a bracha shakal nebidvaro on your orange juice and then go out and take a look and have in mind that the bracha should encompass those beautiful sites as well. I think the Bnei Saskar, he wanted to make a bracha on tobacco. Because he found, I guess, the smoking, whatever, he smoked a pipe, something like that. They didn't know it was unhealthy. He found that to be so geschmack, and there's no bracha on tobacco. So he would make a bracha of shahakal on something else first, and then smoke. Okay, so there's precedents of that nature, but but to add on new circumstances. We're a little nervous to do so, notwithstanding Rav Ozner's chiddush over here. But you could argue that Rav Ozner was just, you know, we saw in the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Tigash v'tirash ha'aretz." That at least phenomena that are very much, we'll call it geocentric. You know, in the same way the earthquake was a form of the earth trembling. Essentially, a volcano is the same. Also, the geology is probably different. Okay, but one could argue that it is essentially another expression of kochel gros moly olam, some sort of, you know, major, you know, form of destruction caused by the earth, you know, deep down in the bowels of the earth, malfunctioning and breaking from their normal patterns, and that would warrant a bracha. So how far could you go with that? You could say a tsunami is the same, right? Major tidal waves can be caused by earthquakes underneath the sea, okay? Landslides, avalanches may be the same, okay? So it might be better to make a bracha without shema malchus in some of these situations. That's what the Sefer Shar Ayin suggests, because it's certainly subject to machlokes and poskim, but you can make that argument very, very convincingly that some of the more dramatic examples, such as witnessing a volcano erupting, would warrant a bracha. Okay, let's talk about an interesting shaila, a big chiddush. I actually know the person. I know the person is who asked this question to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. He didn't receive an answer via mail the way he asked the question, but the question ended up in one of Rav Zilberstein's svarim, the Chashukei Chemer. Okay, so take a look at your page number 7. The question is as follows: She'ela, biyom tes yud tes betamuz tufshin samach dalet, in the year 2004, okay, in the summertime, yud tes tamuz, roda ha'adama be'eretz Yisrael, there was an earthquake in Eretz Yisrael. Ubechazei Hashem Yisbarach lo nigrom kol nezek, thank God, nothing damaging occurred. Ma'adin kasher adam birach ha'motzi, real story, person made a bracha ha'motzi lechem in the arts. Before he got to eat, the earth shook, and oi, he said, oi, it's an earthquake. Actually, the person was American, so he said, whoa, earthquake. Would you have to, when you reserve your meal, you get out from underneath the table, and you want to eat your sandwich, would you make another bracha or not? So Zilberstein writes as follows. And says, if you were screaming, if you were yelling, in order to tell your kids, go, run for cover, get out of here, ain't a hefsek. He said, that's not considered a hefsek. That's part of the meal, right? You can't eat if you're not safe, if you're not alive, if you're killed by an earthquake. It's no different than if a person makes a bracha and they realize there's no salt at the table. And they say, please pass the salt, please bring the salt over, or feed the animals. The person's not supposed to eat until
until their animals have something to eat for lunch. There it's usher to eat before you feed the behema, so it's not considered hefsek. In our case also, you have to warn them to run for cover, because if they don't, they're not going to be able to eat either, God forbid, and you're going to lose the bracha. So that's a big chiddush. So he says that warning your family or telling people to run for cover is not a hatchet between making the bracha and eating, and if you resume your meal afterwards, you could just go on without making new bracha. That's a big chiddush. Imagine if a person makes a mosi lechem aris and they see someone at the table, they're choking, they collapse, they faint, and you go call hatzala, and everything is under control now. Baruch Hashem, person's healthy, and go back to the meal. Should you sit down, I guess you didn't speak the whole time, you didn't have a heskadas or whatever, maybe even if you did speak, you had to speak, that was the pekuach nefesh, but then you would sit down and eat like nothing happened and continue without a bracha. Seems like a very, very big chiddush. Very, very big chiddush, but that's what the Chashuke Chemed suggests. Okay? Let's shift for our final few moments together to talking a little more about what the causes of an earthquake could be. Okay? Now, without a doubt, the earthquake is an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's might. As we started with in discussing the bracha, it's appropriate. Shekochok v'rosam al olam. Okay? And maybe why these items, in particular, are mentioned in the Mishnah, five examples, right, of osa ma'ase bereishis. Not just do they display the koch of Hashem, they also are representative of Hashem's creation. I think we discussed recently about the four elements on the rabbinic periodic table, the Eish, Afar, Mayim, and Ruach, and those comprise all the different components that come together for creation. It's actually a fifth. Vilna Gaon says in Shnos Elyo that there's really five. And each one of those are represented by these examples in the Mishnah. The Zavos are the Adama, right? That's the earthquake. That's the Afar. The Ra'amim, the thunder, and Brakim are water, the storms, and the lightning, the Eish. Ruchos, okay, that's also mentioned in the Mishnah, the hurricane winds. That's another element, Ruach. And the fifth one, the Zikin, the shooting stars, the comets, are Keneged HaShamayim, Shu Yisorach HaMishah. There's a fifth element of creation, one that doesn't broach our existence on Olam Hazeh, on this earth, but exists in Shamayim, including the celestial spheres, and those are the Zikim. So without a doubt, even if we have scientific correlation and an explanation for phenomena such as an earthquake, it's really entirely in the hands of Hashem. It's something very, very, very easy to appreciate, despite the tectonic plates and the fault lines that are found in different parts of the world. Those are ways to identify where there's more risk, where there's chances, where there's probabilities of an earthquake or whatnot. But we see Hashem's hand in the Bria, perhaps in more than most other areas of nature when it comes to earthquakes. The United States Geological Survey states that no one has ever predicted an earthquake, and no one, to our knowledge, is able to predict an earthquake. Given the knowledge that we have, it's just impossible. It's something that, we can try to predict probability, but we can't, in the foreseeable future, predict a major earthquake. Okay? We just haven't discovered that, and maybe we never will. And the fact that we haven't, even in 2023, when we can invent multiple vaccines for COVID within a very short period of time, the same disease, the same virus that killed millions of people, it is a sign of Kochel Gavrosa Mali Olam to appreciate that this is really Hashem with his hand behind the scenes. So let's just try to focus on a couple points, start with the history and then the Hashkafa behind it, with that backdrop of realizing that it is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's power that is orchestrating nature that we then go ahead and witness. So if we go all the way back, we can trace an important earthquake, at least in Yiddishkeit, to yesterday's Haftorah, actually. In Sefer Yeshaya, we're given a vision. We're given a vision that the Navi sees about what's happening in Shemayim in front of the Kisei HaKavod. And he has the Malachim reciting Kedusha. Kadosh, 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 Shem Tzvakos, all that comes from Perek Vov of Yeshaya that we saw yesterday. That depiction includes booming voices of the angels and a description in the pasuk that says the doorposts of the Beis HaMikdash shook and actually moved several amos from their location. The Mefarshim explained that that was an earthquake. It wasn't any earthquake. It was an earthquake documented by other Nevi'im as well, such as Yoel, in the time of Uzziyahu. Uzziyahu was a king, a very successful king, but he's from Malchus Beis David, but unfortunately success went to his head. And he insisted that he was going to bring a ketores in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, despite the fact that the Kohanim tried to stop him. He said, I'm going forward. And he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Two different versions of what his punishment was. Either he died right away, or he was struck with saras. But it was very clear that he was not making the right choice. And part of the retribution, part of the fallout, was a terrible, devastating earthquake that occurred in his time in Yerushalayim. Now, short of that, interestingly enough, we have a Masorah, the Pri Adam accorded in the Kav HaChaim, Simen Tav Kuf Ayin Vav in Halas Tanios. The Dirshu has it over here in number 10 in that Simen. Says something fascinating. So even though the Mishnayos and the Gemaras and Tainus talk about fast days and Tfilos and blowing shofar and different things that Klal Yisrael is required to do in response to tragedies, in response to dangerous occurrences such as wolves eating people or attacks by soldiers or some sort of disease that affects infants. On that list, says in the Mishnah in Tainus, Daf Yutes, that we have to declare a Tainus, have to declare a fast day when there's a Mapolis. Mapolis means that houses are falling down, houses that are otherwise healthy. And that would include if an earthquake causes it. The end of the Sifrei Shulchan Aruch. But the minhag in Yerushalayim is not to make a Tainus Tzibur on a Ra'ash, on an earthquake, and the reason is because it says in Avos Rabbi Nosson, Me'olam lohaisam apolos b'Yerushalayim. Other than that earthquake, in the time of Uzio, we have a Mesorah, seemingly from the Tanaim, if I'm understanding correctly, that an earthquake will not hurt anyone, will not kill anyone, I should say, in Yerushalayim. And that has thus far proven true throughout history. There was a major earthquake in Eretz Yisrael in 1927, and it did some damage. There were Arabs, I believe, local Arabs who were killed in Yerushalayim. They could feel it. That was the story we mentioned earlier from Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld and Rabbi David Baran, the brachas that they made. But no one died, no Jew died in that earthquake. Not a coincidence. At the same time, in other parts of the country, the Ariya HaGalil, Shechem, and Tiberia, there was tragic results, and there were tragic results, and people did die. A little more documentation on the history of the earthquakes in Eretz Yisrael. We could provide in that earthquake, July 11th, 1927, the epicenter, I think, was north of Yericho, and it affected places from Lebanon all the way down to the Negev. 350 people killed in the area that's now Jordan. 800 buildings that fell down, mainly in Shechem. It actually stopped the flow of the Jordan River for several years because of rock collapses. But no one died in Yerushalayim. The earthquake that really rocked the country was January 1st, 1837. The epicenter was near Tzfas, and 5,000 people died. Much of the old city was destroyed. Okay, there was another big one in 1759, also where there are many, many buildings that collapsed in Tzfas, and many people were killed. What's interesting about that disaster and you have to be the Chassam Sofer to state this. But the Chassam Sofer said that the reason for that destruction, the reason for that earthquake, Dafkin Spas, it didn't affect Yerushalayim, was because although the Talmidim of Baal Shem Tov and those who left parts of Europe in the time of the Inquisition had come to Tzfas and built the center of Yiddishkeit there. That's where the Mekubalim were, the Arizal, that's where Yosef Karo was. Even though that had become the center of Yiddishkeit, nonetheless, it was as if Yerushalayim, at that point, felt abandoned and alone because the effort was not made to revitalize and rebuild Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim throughout the Crusades and really since the Churban was almost desolate, certainly of Jews. Ramban writes when he finally made it to Eretz Yisrael after running away from Spain in the 1200s, he came and there were four people. There were only four Jews living in Yerushalayim at the time. And he didn't have a minion even, so he had to leave, and he moved somewhere else. Some say he died, and he's buried in Akko. But for hundreds of years, all those centuries, Yerushalayim was very weak. Until the 1800s and 1900s, that's really when it began to come back. And it was a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Chassam Sofer said, that too much attention was given to other parts of Eretz Yisrael, and not to Yerushalayim, where it should have been given. Unfortunately, what occurred instead was this earthquake in Tzfas, okay? But that's as far as Eretz Yisrael is concerned. Other earthquakes that affected Eretz Yisrael, affected the world. To take a bigger picture look at this, and with this we'll wrap it up. The Gemara in Brachos that we cited earlier, Daf Nun Tes, discusses what the reason for earthquakes are. We do have midrashim that say it's due to lack of fulfillment of trumas and maisers. That's why it affects the earth. And we also find another version of Chazal which say the reason for the earthquake is a punishment for mishkav zachar, for when homosexuality is being perpetrated. It's another thing that's mentioned elsewhere in Chazal. But the Gemara in Brachos has a more general explanation. Rav Katina has a conversation with a certain sorcerer, and the sorcerer gives his explanation for earthquakes, and even though Rav Katina rejected it, for whatever reason, Chazal say that there was truth to it. And the suggestion that he makes, although there were Amoraim and Tanaim who gave other explanations, the reason given by the sorcerer was as follows. He said, the earthquake is caused by two giant tears that fall from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, as it were, when he sees that his sons, his children, Klal Yisrael, are dwelling in pain and suffering amongst the Umas Olam. These two tears drop, and they fall in the Yam HaGadol, in the Mediterranean, and the shock that's caused when that occurs is what brings the devastation, or at least what brings the tremors, what brings the shake of the earthquakes throughout the area. That's what he says. Rabbeinu Chananel has a comment. You'll see this on the side, at the bottom of the page. You want to read it inside. Rabbeinu Chananel, understanding the general thrust of our Hashkafa, there's an Arichas in the Gaonim about this, that even if there are events that occur that may have natural explanation to them, but the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu activated it right now was obviously because of a certain intent, and the intent is directly connected to Klal Yisrael, even when it happens at a distance. Let's read the Rabbeinu Chananel, one more source or two, and then we will close. Rabbeinu Chananel writes as follows, starting from Morish de Demos, Chas v'shalom dima mamish. It doesn't actually mean a tear. Elema ein tipos kein demos. Similar to a tear, some sort of metaphor or imagery. Interesting, the Yavetz point out in the Gemara that the gematria of Demos, Dima plus Dima, Dima times two, is the same as Rachel. Rachel mevaka albanah, Rachel cries for her children. So, Mesnachem Kadosh Baruch Hu Shlola Abid Olamo. The fall of those tears is Hashem consoling himself and not destroying the world. Misgagos v'yodos yamagadol, they fall into the yamagadol. The kolon holech misofa olam v'atzofo, and causes a crash that can be heard across the earth. Zehu geya, this is the geya or gua as it appears in Argumar. Zukula harsli shoshakash baruchu, ulo ozvam, lo shacham, lo nacham, v'chi osid lachziyam. All this dramatic description, the noise and the shake that's being described, is a message to the Jewish people that Hashem has not forgotten them, has not left them, and has not rejected them, and will bring them back. Kol zeh lechazik es libam shel yashem nagula, to encourage them not to lose faith from the fact that the gula is still imminent. El yizblu al tzaros ad shi gishalim yashem zman shegozer kosh baruch liyosem gos. But it's just that for now, they have to suffer and tolerate the challenges of being in gulos until the time has come when Hashem will end the gulos. Kama shegozer b'rishona, v'avim v'inu osam arba me'o shaman, same way that there was a time set for the original gulos in Mitzrayim, and then it ended. Zman osu gulos ha'yadua v'zein nidua. The problem is that one had an endpoint. We don't know what this endpoint is. Kolpanim, yesh zman katzav l'gulos. There still is an endpoint. We're just not aware of it. U'mar kosh baruch b'lamo kama osios l'diak yesh l'tenek kosh baruch k'min koshi. But at the same time, in the duration of that Galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into the world these signs that demonstrate that it's hard for Hashem, as it were. There's an Imo Anochi B'tzara, when his children, they are wandering, and they're unsettled in this Galus. And his mercy has not left them. And he will bring them back. Maybe the fact that an earthquake is chosen and there's an earthquake preceding the time of Mashiach is not a coincidence. And there's a symbolic connection between those two. These events are meant to remind us that Hashem is there. He's close to us. And that should strengthen our commitment to Avodas Hashem, to learning and performing mitzvos and following his ways. Now, one could suggest that what Rabbeinu Chananel is saying over here is limited in application to earthquakes that don't kill and don't do damage and don't destroy, but are just, again, the 3 or 4 on the Richter scale that remind you, like the lightning and thunder, as Gemara also says on Daf Nun Tes, the lightning and thunder are created by Hashem in order to straighten out the crookedness in a person's heart, to scare a person into recognizing the importance of following the path of Yir Shamayim, to realize his own mortality and the strength of the Ribono Shel Olam, the Romulus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that can sometimes only be accomplished when we are when we experience the pachad that a dangerous phenomenon can instill in a human being. Let's just close with an excerpt from a letter written by the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim wrote this in response to that earthquake of July 1927. And of course, this has important implications for us. Hinezet mikor nevahalnu v'neradnu l'shmo ha'shmo ha'nora al-dvar ridas adam v'yishlaim. It was still something that shook everyone up, even though there were no deaths. Afshar b'meshach har b'tkuva sh'avru ha'yukam ridas b'eretz Yisrael. Over the years, he said, there are many earthquakes in Eretz Yisrael. Avon kol makom ridas gazulu ha'yisak ha'mosa. This was apparently much more serious. Property Shlaim, your college gufal karmi olam reida, lavad bimei uzio melch Yehuda. It was a little more notable and remarkable because since the time of Uzio, as Chofetz Chaim tells us here, there has not been an earthquake that impacted Yerushalayim that way. Shnechlas l'mikdash l'haktik toros mavur b'chazal. Chay nishma miharbi maros noroim hamisavim be'is achronu b'olam. He says it's not just in Yerushalayim. There's many things going on in the world that are frightening. And very unusual. Kamashet of Anora of America, Ashkenaz, Bchomadina Medina, other countries at that time experiencing similar natural disasters. Mikros Moros, Ke'elo Achet Tzilana Oznei, Oznei Hashemeya. These are events and news that they're shaking in our ears. Chalil Lan Lomar Kiyada Mikra Haisapo. God forbid a person to say this was just happenstance. This is what occurred. Randomly. We know from the Pesukim in the Torah, what occurs in this world is supposed to make it clear to us and to help us recognize that it is Hashem who runs the world. Even these disasters, they're all from God. As Amos says, if something terrible, some tragedy happens in the city, we're not going to attribute it to Hashem. What could be the reason why Hashem brought terrible things like this to the earth? Truth is, while their people died, even though the Jews were not affected by it in the same way, as we described earlier, but financially they were still impacted by it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not allow it to kill them, but it did still create an economic disaster. Anyone who is a maven will understand this is not a simple matter. Not something that happens to occur. It's a warning from heaven. The other mishav artema to the people here in this world, it has to be something which serves as an impetus to do tshuva, to redouble our efforts and improve ourselves, because we can't predict, we can't assure our safety from events such as this. And then the Chofetz Chaim goes on to say that no doubt the tremendous Chil Shabbos that's occurring in Eretz Yisrael, the secularization, people sending their kids to secular schools where they learn to be Mechal Shabbos, this is obviously sinning, which has tremendous implications. Tchias HaMesim, warning about laxing Taras HaMishpacha, not going to shul, to daven, being Mevatel, Mitzvot Tzvillin, Kriya Shema, and so on and so forth. Husimim Shenim wrote some Makav Olam, O Malchus, O HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'nikra Poshri Yisrael B'gufa. The punishments are obviously very serious for someone who rejects Kabbalah's Omal Hashemayim. So the Chofetz Chaim, this famous letter, says that even things that occur at a distance, even things that don't affect Jews directly, still have to be understood as a message from the Baruch Shalom to improve our ways. And Pnei Yeshua writes that there was an earthquake in Lvov where he lived, and that was many houses collapsed, and he was makabel on himself at that time to write the Sefer Pnei Yeshua. He took a message from the event as an opportunity to strengthen his commitment and even further his efforts on behalf of Torah. And it's just one example of how we have to respond when we see these events. Sometimes they affect us closely, sometimes at a distance, but the kochel gevurah mal olam has to always be in our minds and in our hearts, and be used as a way to power our focus and motivate us to strengthen our Baruch Hashem.